Hello, and welcome to this podcast from the Oxford Institute for Energy Studies.
Thank you for joining us in this, the latest edition of the OIES podcast series. My name is David Ledesma, and I'm Distinguished Research Fellow at the Institute, and it's my great pleasure to be joined today by Nicholas Lockhart, who's a partner, and Catherine Connolly, who's a Senior Managing Associate with Sidley Austin LLP. Now, we're here today to discuss their contribution to the Oxford Energy Forum number 132 that was published in June 2022, titled A Tale of Two Carbon Pricing Schemes for Aviation, the Interplay Between the EU, UK ETS, and Corsia, that they co-authored with Stella Perantikou, who is also an associate with Sidley Austin. Now, just to timestamp this recording in an ever-changing market, we're recording it on the afternoon of Friday, the 9th of September, 2022. Catherine and Nicholas, welcome to the OIS podcast series.
Hello, very nice to be here.
Thank you, David, for the invitation.
Nick, can I start with you by asking you to set out, in a nutshell, two types of schemes your article addresses?
Yes, thanks, David. So as you say, we address two carbon pricing schemes for aviation. They both involve a market mechanism. One of them is national and the other is international. So the national scheme is the EU's emissions trading scheme, and the international scheme is the carbon offsetting and reduction scheme for international aviation, or more snappily known as CORSIA. So although these two schemes are both market-based, they actually use quite different mechanisms to impose a carbon price. So let me just start with what are the differences in the market mechanism of the two schemes. So the EU's ETS is a so-called cap and trade scheme that applies across the whole of the EEA. And under a cap and trade scheme, the regulator sets a cap on total emissions, which is then gradually ratcheted down over time to meet net zero targets. And that cap is then subdivided into allowances. And operators have to submit an allowance for each ton of CO2 emissions. Now, these allowances are partly distributed for free and partly paid for at auction. And in the case of aviation, operators get a portion of allowances for free at the moment, and they also pay for a portion of allowances. But under the EU's proposals, aviation will move to a system that involves entirely paid for allowances by the end of 2026. Now, these allowances can be traded in the market. So you can go into the market and buy allowances to enable you to meet your regulatory liabilities. Now, that means that the allowances are effectively an asset that has a value in the market. And that value fluctuates over time. At the moment, the cost of an EU allowance is roughly 70 euros per ton. But that obviously goes up and down. There's been a general upward trend. And that's the price signal that encourages the operator to reduce emissions over time. The fact that you have to invest in an asset that costs at the moment around 70 euros a ton, that's what creates the incentive for a reduction in emissions over time. When we look at CORSIA, on the other hand, it uses a quite different market mechanism to impose a carbon price. So under CORSIA, operators have to purchase carbon offsets for a certain portion of their emissions for certain of their international flights. Okay, so what are these carbon offsets? Carbon offsets are generated in projects that involve carbon savings. Carbon savings either arise through removals of carbon from the atmosphere, so for example, planting trees that suck up carbon dioxide, or they involve projects that deploy a more carbon-efficient process. So a good example here would be replacing traditional wood-burning stoves with clean cook stoves that involve, say, solar power and more thermal efficiency. The project developer is then issued with certificates for each ton of carbon savings, and can sell those certificates into a carbon market. And airline operators can then go into the market and buy the certificate and use that certificate to meet their CORSIA liability. So the market mechanism here is a producer-generated certificate that can then be traded in the marketplace. The current price in the market for aviation offsets is around $5 per ton. I think one of the really positive features of carbon offsets is that you leverage private finance through the purchase of these certificates into projects that involve carbon savings, often in developing countries, but that then benefit the planet generally. But so, yeah, just to summarize, David, you have two very different market mechanisms. One is the regulatory allowance in the EU scheme, which currently has a price of around 70 euros per dollar. And the second is the carbon offset scheme, where the price is somewhat lower.
Now, that I have to say, Nick, summarizes incredibly well, you know, those two kind of types of schemes. So, Catherine, can I come to you? You know, both schemes, which Nick has overviewed, puts a price on aviation emissions, but through different mechanisms. So what are the key differences between these mechanisms?
Thanks, David. Well, Nick's already addressed one of the key differences, which is the way in which you meet your liability for your emissions under the two schemes. I'll talk about a few more of those key differences. So first is which emissions are covered. Second is which flights are covered, and third is the time period over which the two schemes operate. So looking first at which emissions are covered, when we talk about differences in which emissions, I don't mean differences in the greenhouse gases that are covered. That's actually an area of similarity. So both schemes only deal with CO2. So the other kinds of greenhouse gases that are associated with aviation, which are things like nitrogen oxide, sulfates, soot, all of which make a major contribution, all of those are out of both schemes. And that's something that we'll return back to a little bit at the end when we talk about what's next under these schemes. So when we talk about which emissions are covered, what we mean is how much of the emissions are covered. Under the ETS, it's everything. You have liability for all the emissions that you make, let's say, in a given year. Under CORSIA, it's only a portion of those emissions, and that portion is calculated as a growth factor, is the term that's used, and that's effectively the difference between the amount of emissions generated in one year as compared to a baseline year. Currently, that baseline year for CORSIA is 2019. Interestingly, it was originally intended to be a combination of 2019 and 2020, but the ICAO states agreed to basically exclude 2020 from that baseline year because of the disruption to aviation that was caused by the COVID pandemic. The idea is that 2020 is just not that representative. So if we take, for example, 2025, the amount of emissions under CORSIA that an operator has to offset is the difference between what it emitted in 2019 and what it emitted in 2025. Another point that's interesting about CORSIA is when CORSIA calculates that growth, it's not done on an individual operator basis. So whereas under the ETS, the emissions that you're liable for are connected directly to each individual economic operator's operations, under CORSIA, it's calculated on a sectoral basis. So each operator is required to offset the growth in emissions across the sector. That will eventually change and shift towards, over time, being more closely tied to each individual operator's growth. The second big difference is which flights are covered. So the ETS is what we've been calling internally Domestic Plus. Basically, in its current scope, it applies to domestic flights within the EU plus those EEA countries. So that's Norway, Liechtenstein, and Switzerland. It also covers, Norway, Liechtenstein and Iceland. It also covers flights to Switzerland and the UK. And just as a note to kind of, unfortunately for your audience, complicate things a little bit further, flights from Switzerland and the UK are covered by those countries' respective ETSs, hence why we call it Domestic Plus. Now, I'm just going to add a footnote there that we're going to return to this question a little bit later because there's a question about whether or not that scope could be expanded further internationally. CORSIA, on the other hand, is purely international. So an operator, which is quite common, that has both domestic and international operations, any emissions generated in its domestic operations are not covered by its CORSIA obligations. Third is the time frame under which these two schemes are going to operate. The ETS is effectively indefinite. It's part of a permanent package of legislation brought under the EU's Green Deal towards reaching the EU's climate goals, which are, of course, 55% emissions reductions by 2030 and net zero by 2050. It's part and parcel of that package. CORSIA has a built-in expiry date of 2035. And we will see basically what comes next after that. That's another thing that we're going to pick up towards the end. And now I'll just throw to Nick briefly to give an example of how this might all operate in practice.
Yeah, so just to sort of illustrate some of the differences that we've been talking about between the ETS and CORSIA, let's imagine a flight that has emissions of 10 tons. And let's think about what the liability could be under CORSIA and would be under the ETS. So in terms of CORSIA, the extent of the liability depends upon emissions growth since the 2019 baseline. But let's imagine for the sake of discussion that we have 10% growth in emissions since the baseline. What that would mean would be that you would have to offset one of the 10 tons of emissions by buying offset certificates in the carbon markets. And as I said, the price for that currently is around $5 per ton. So for you'd have to offset one ton, you would have to buy one certificate, and the cost for that would be around $5. On the other hand, if we think about how the ETS would work for the same level of emissions, 10 tons on an ETS-covered flight, you would have to provide allowances for all 10 tons. And at the moment, the price for an allowance, if you had to buy all of your allowances, which will be the case probably after the end of 2026, is 70 euros per ton. So in this case, under the ETS, the extent of the liability would be 700 euros per ton. So the extent of the price signal in CORSIA and in the ETS is really quite different because of some of these differences that Catherine and I have both been talking about.
Okay, so Nick, staying with CORSIA, you know, could you perhaps share with our listeners, you know, who is behind it and how does it work?
So yeah, CORSIA was adopted under the auspices of ICAO. And ICAO is an international organization. It stands for the International Civil Aviation Organization, which is a specialized agency within the United Nations framework. There are 193 states that are parties to ICAO, and those are the states that have signed up to CORSIA. So CORSIA is effectively an international agreement. So it's an agreement within the framework of public international law. I think one thing that it's important to understand is that the CORSIA regime is distinct from the Paris Agreement regime. So the Paris regime imposes obligations on states to reduce emissions within their own territory, whereas CORSIA under ICAO seeks to reduce emissions from international aviation on flights between countries. A second feature, I think, which results from the fact that CORSIA is an international agreement, is that that agreement doesn't have legal force in itself. So it has to be implemented through national rules. So it's translated into national laws, which then result in airline operators having to meet CORSIA requirements by complying with national rules. Under CORSIA, there are three phases. There's a pilot phase, which will end in 2023. Then there's phase one, which will then commence and end in 2026. And then phase two takes us through until 2035. In the pilot phase and in phase one, states have to opt in or volunteer to be part of the offsetting requirements under CORSIA. And at the moment, 115 ICAO states have volunteered from the beginning of 2023 to be part of the offsetting requirements under CORSIA. And then from the end of phase one, from 2026, the offsetting requirements will apply to all all ICAO parties.
Catherine, can I perhaps come to you to talk about the European Trading System, that's the ETS? Now, I understand the ETS covers emissions generated in the EU, but how does the EU decide which aircraft's emissions are covered?
Yeah, thanks, David. So that's been a really tricky and at times quite controversial question for the EU. So I said earlier that this was a domestic plus scope of application. That's the current application of the scheme. But in fact, when this scheme was kind of in development in sort of early policy iterations, it was initially intended to apply to all flights in and out of the EU to any third country. And immediately you can see that that creates a potentially enormous overlap with CORSIA. The EU then walked that back and considerably narrowed the scope of application to what we have now, to our domestic plus scope of application. That narrowing back, that walking back, was temporary. So there's a built-in, we could call it snapback mechanism, where the scope will automatically return to full, if you like, full international scope in 2024, unless the EU decides in the meantime to do something different. Now, it's interesting that one of the reasons that the EU walked back its policy in this area in terms of the scope of application was precisely to give kind of space, if you like, to the negotiations that were going on at ICAO at the time. There was a sense, if you like, of not wanting to tread on the toes of that process. So we're really in kind of a hold and see or a wait and see what happens phase at the moment. There's a lot of domestic pressure in the EU to return the ETS back to full scope coverage, largely driven by concerns of some stakeholders that CORSIA doesn't go far enough. So we're in a period of waiting to see what happens. And Nick has an interesting point to make about the comparison between what's going on in aviation and different sectors. Nick, do you want to jump in there?
Yeah, so just a footnote. So one of the, I think, really interesting features of CORSIA under ICAO is that it is the first international carbon pricing mechanism of its kind. It's on a sector-specific basis for aviation. There's another transport sector, international transport sector, where attention is also being paid to emissions, and that's maritime shipping. Unlike with ICAO, the International Maritime Organization thus far has not been able to engage in meaningful negotiations towards an international scheme for emissions reductions, for example, through carbon pricing or some other mechanism. And in the meantime, the EU has come with proposals that would actually sweep some international maritime emissions into the scope of the EU's ETS. So under the proposals, whenever a voyage begins or ends in an EU port, then up to 50% of those emissions will be subject to the ETS, and allowances will have to be provided for those emissions. So you can really see that the EU is using its domestic ETS system to try to generate a degree of pressure internationally towards action, partly in aviation and also partly in maritime shipping.
Okay, so we have two sets of carbon pricing schemes, both of which apply to aviation in different ways. Catherine, can I perhaps come back to you and ask, how do they fit together and is there any overlap?
Well, there's a lot of possibility for overlap. Precisely how much depends on a few variables that we'll find out in the next year or two. So to start with, let's assume the current domestic plus scope. There you might have a situation where the same operator is subject to both schemes on different routes. So let's imagine you do a route from LA to Brussels to Paris. That's probably a pretty common route. The first leg of that will be subject to CORSIA. The second leg of that would be subject to the ETS. That's relatively straightforward because you've got two different schemes applying to two different routes. Not too difficult. Where things can start to get really difficult is when you have the two sets of schemes applying to the same route, so effectively applying to the same set of emissions. There's already some possibility for that under our current domestic plus scope because, of course, some of the EEA countries, which are subject to the ETS, some of those flights are international. So imagine Brussels to Geneva, the EEA applies, the ETS applies to that, and COSIA applies to that as well in principle. Now, that potential scope of overlap will get really complicated in a scenario where the ETS snaps back to full international coverage, because then you have a potentially an enormous amount of overlap on a given route. Now, there's been various proposed solutions for how to deal with that without much of a confirmed answer yet. Within the EU, the Commission favours an approach where the EU would effectively retain the ETS in its current domestic plus scope to the exclusion of COSIA. So an international flight, like our, I think it was our Brussels-Oslo example, COSIA would not apply, and COSIA would apply to everything else. The Parliament, on the other hand, favours quite a different approach, where you return the ETS to full international scope, and then you simultaneously apply COSIA to those international flights subject to COSIA. So that would be a situation where basically up until the COSIA baseline, the ETS would cover those admissions. Beyond the COSIA baseline, COSIA would apply, would cover those admissions. Now, just to complicate things still further, let's not forget the fact that the UK has its own ETS, which is running in parallel. And it's proposed a third solution, which is kind of somewhere between the two of them. Basically, in a nutshell, the UK ETS and COSIA would apply separately, except for flights from the UK to EEA countries, in which case you would have the kind of hybrid mix proposed by the Parliament. So you can start to get a sense of kind of just how brain-meltingly complicated this could be for individual operators who are trying to manage their obligations under these two sets of schemes. Let's take another example. You have a route that goes LA, London, Brussels. That's quite a tangled web of different obligations to sort out.
So, Nick, you know, can we now perhaps take the conversation back to the concept of offsetting again? You know, what are the quality control requirements, and if any, you know, that COSIA has to impose?
Yes, so this is a really important question, David, and I think it's maybe worth just spending a moment discussing why quality of carbon credits is so important. And the reason is, as I said earlier, that when you purchase a carbon offset certificate, you're purchasing something that on its face shows a carbon saving of one ton. Of course, what matters is that that one ton of carbon savings has actually happened in the real world. And to ensure that that carbon saving actually happens, you need strong quality criteria. Otherwise, the risk is that the offset certificates amount to little more than greenwashing. So the question of quality criteria really then becomes a question of how are carbon offsets regulated? Now, interestingly, offsets are regulated through a mix of national and international rules and public and private rules. In general terms, I would say that the regulation of offsets is relatively fragmented and relatively limited, and that does create some risks around the quality for offsets, and steps are being taken actually on a broad basis to try to address this problem. The good news for COSIA is that the COSIA agreement contains some reasonably demanding quality criteria. So to give you an example of some of the quality criteria that COSIA has, there are requirements around the methods to quantify the extent of the carbon savings. There are rules to avoid the double counting of savings in different offsetting regimes. There are rules to ensure that the savings are additional to what would have happened anyway under a business as usual scenario. So we want to make sure that the offsetting project is really contributing something new and additional to carbon savings and wouldn't just have happened in the ordinary course. There are also rules to ensure the permanence of the carbon savings. And in fact, the Oxford Institute recently hosted a really excellent podcast on the need for permanence around carbon savings and offsets. Then There are rules on the need for independent verification and proper program governance. And in practice, the way this works is, and this is really where the mix of public and private comes in, the way this works is that there are a number of private registries that register carbon offset programs and then certify the emission savings under those programs according to criteria that they maintain, using, of course, also independent verification. ICAO then accredits offset programs run by private registries. And at the moment, there are ICAO-eligible or CORSIA-eligible offsets that are run by seven different registries. And these include all of the big registries, registries that listeners may be familiar with, like the Gold Standard, VERA, American Carbon Registry, and the Global Carbon Council. So ICAO and CORSIA do have some rules to ensure that there is a high level of quality around CORSIA offsets.
Well, look, Nick, you know, I'd like to kind of stay with you if I can as we get to the end of this podcast, because as our listeners know, I always like to end with a kind of forward-looking question. So can I perhaps ask you, you know, what are the big issues on the horizon for aviation carbon pricing?
Yeah, David, it's always really interesting to try to look around the corner and see what's coming. And I think there are some really interesting things coming in this space. So in the very short term, and looking at CORSIA, there will be a final decision made actually at the ICAO Assembly starting this month on the final baseline for CORSIA. Catherine and I have both said it will be 2019, which seems very likely. And actually what's most likely to happen is that the baseline will be a reasonably high percentage of 2019 emissions. Second area of future work at ICAO on offsetting is that there will probably be steps taken to try to improve on the quality of the offset. So I just set out that there are already pretty good rules under CORSIA for quality, but there are steps that could be taken to improve those rules. Really, the big ticket item in international aviation emissions is the next generation of ICAO rules. So Catherine mentioned that CORSIA is time-bound and will end in 2035. And we've also mentioned that the objective of CORSIA is to ensure carbon neutral growth by reference to 2019. So that leaves a question about what comes next after CORSIA, and will the ambition in ICAO go beyond carbon neutral growth? Will it be something like trying to secure net zero emissions for aviation at some future date, 2050, 2060? And as part of that conversation, I think we can expect to focus in ICAO on non-CO2 emissions. So Catherine talked about that. It was things like nitrogen oxides, sulfates, contrails is another example. I think there will also be an interesting debate around rules for sustainable aviation fuel, which will be very much part of the industry's efforts to achieve both carbon neutral growth, but also in the longer term, net zero emissions. These are aviation fuels that are produced in a way that is sustainable or under CORSIA rules in a way that involves a low carbon content. But there's quite a lot of work that remains to be done on sustainable aviation fuel. Of course, sitting underneath the international rules that are agreed at ICAO will be national schemes for domestic aviation, like the EU, and we've talked about the EU's ETS, and as part of the Green Deal, as Catherine has said, the EU is ramping up its own emissions for aviation in the ETS, and looking around the corner, I think we can expect to see the ETS being strengthened under existing proposals, And one notable feature of that is the abolition of free allowances for aviation, likely by the end of 2026, which will send a much bigger price signal to the industry by making all allowances subject to payment.
Well, Catherine and Nick, you know, thank you so much for your time today and for also such an excellent contribution to the June 2022 Oxford Energy Forum, A Tale of Two Carbon Pricing Schemes for Aviation, the interplay between the EU-UK ETS and CORSIA. I hope you've all enjoyed listening to this podcast. Thank you and goodbye to everyone.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from the Oxford Institute for Energy Studies. You can find other podcasts, as well as all our written research, on our website at www.oxfordenergy.org. If you would like more details about our oil, gas, electricity or China programmes, then please contact us at information@oxfordenergy.org.